I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. My name is Marcus Speller.
I am Jim Campbell.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Julio Donaldson.
What a beautiful bank holiday, everybody. Making the use of the time off, are you? We certainly are. We're bringing you another Football Ramble. Good to have you with me, guys, even if it's remotely, Peter.
It is. It's good. I've got, I'm doing all my bank holiday chores. I'm leaf blowing. I am pressure washering. I've got a leaf blower set up next to a pressure washer and they're going at it. They're battling. Yeah. It's brilliant. I'm laying out bets which one's going to explode first.
It's like Godzilla versus Mothra.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
For those unaware with your domestic situation, Pete, you live in a flat, don't you? And it's not autumn, so presumably you've imported these leaves.
Well, no, actually, I think you'll find that Peter has escaped London back to his native northeast, as is
as is the style.
I stopped off at my popular school trip destination, Barnard Castle.
Yeah. Yeah, but Pete, as long as you were following the science home, then I'm sure it was absolutely fine.
I was, yeah.
Wait, I tell you what, if Pete did that, the big story wouldn't be, I can't believe he's done this. It would be, why did Pete need childcare?
Yeah.
Why did the lady let him do that? And also, I can't drive, so many crimes.
Yeah.
Well, we should move on very swiftly then, Peter, before we lose you to jail.
Hope you're on.
Well, absolutely. Well, we enjoyed, or Peter, you very much enjoyed the Berlin Derby, of course, on Friday night. Your beloved Hertha beat Union 4-0. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
I just like how I've been awarded this team that I've seen
you
once.
You chose them.
Couldn't stand. I think I was awarded them.
You chose them!
But I think, I do believe... yeah, they did very well. I didn't choose them. I think they were chosen for me by an email, if you remember, Marcus. Now Sancho apparently is up there with Messi for goal involvements this season. There's a new metric under lockdown. Someone's come up with goal involvements.
Yeah. God, when you say an email chose you, again, you don't have to let the emailers be your overlords.
Yeah, Pete, can I just chime in on this? You definitely 100% chose them.
Yeah.
Pretty sure you did it live on the show.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and you also said that you'd seen them before, you didn't like them and it was rubbish and everything, yeah, but you chose them anyway, which meant we laughed. Secondly, Sancho didn't play for Hertha Berlin.
No, I think Peter was making a wider point.
Even for you, Peter, this is a tangled web quite early
on. I was trying to move off, sorry.
No, hang on. No, I think you'll find that Jadon Sancho does actually play for Hertha Berlin, and I don't have the facts at hand. But Peter, you know, if he believes that, then you know,
he's played for him all along.
And I mean, what are football teams anyway? You know, they're just a collection of people. Jadon Sancho is a person.
Has Pete acted legally with integrity?
I'm not going to take any further questions. No further questions on Pete Donaldson.
I believe he's acted as any football fan would, reasonably.
Yeah, exactly.
And with integrity.
Exactly. Jadon Sancho's English. Pete's English. What's the problem here? Can we move on? Okay. Right. It was 4-0, though, okay? That is a fact. That was true. So no further questions on my integrity. But, Peter, your favourite and mine, Mateus Cunha, with another nice goal. He scored a lovely one. I described it as Peter Unluvu-esque in the first game.
Peter.
He scored another nice little curler into the corner.
Would you say this is also unloving, though? I mean, I do want to move on to the Dortmund Wolfsburg match, but yeah, it was an excellent goal. And there are going to be a lot of, because the eyes of the entire world are on the Bundesliga at the moment, there's going to be a lot of footballers getting picked up in the close season, whenever that might actually happen.
I have to say, I do like unloving as a description of a goal. It sounds almost like Lovecraftian, you know. It's got a sort of quite, it's got a gravitas to it.
Uh-huh. And it does. Impossible fascism, like old Lovecraft had.
Well, yeah.
This game, I mean, shout out to the Union keeper for getting one in the nuts very early on, but still playing very well, despite them losing 4-0. But, I mean, maybe I'm being harsh here. Either that or I've just watched Schalke too much. But the defending since football's come back has been absolutely horrendous. One of the things we did expect, and one of the things we've seen actually in Germany, is the fact that home advantage seems to have just completely disappeared. I think there are only two home wins in this round of fixtures, which is strange, but understandable. But the other thing maybe we didn't quite predict was the lack of intensity on display for defensive sides of teams. I mean, I understand how if you're an attacking player or a creative player, a lot of time perhaps you play on instinct and there's certain patterns and certain runs you need to make. But defensive players obviously have to be big on concentration and big on intensity. And we're not seeing that from what I've seen from a lot of the Bundesliga at the moment. And I wonder if it'll be replicated across the other leagues when they come back. I know Marcus, have you noticed that as well?
I think the defenders are socially distancing from the strikers. I have done, yeah.
I think the first week it seemed to be the strikers could not put anything together in the 6-yard box, and maybe it just takes one more match for the defenders to get back up to speed. Because you see that in pre-season, don't you? You always see like ridiculous kind of cricket scores when people go out on tours of the US and the Far East and stuff. But it's been poor, hasn't it, thus far?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of high-scoring games, but Dortmund Wolfsburg was one of the sort of more regular scoring games. well, we did see Jadon Sancho play for nearly half an hour and registered another assist for those who like the stats.
Goal involvement. It's a goal involvement, Marcus. I want to talk about the goal involvements.
Well, they should all be involved in the goal. But Luke, you must be delighted that your beloved Dortmund are keeping the pace with Bayern.
Yeah, as you can imagine, Mark, it's a very, very sort of emotionally charged afternoon for me. I mean, you know, as you well know, as I've mentioned before on the show, when I was born, I was black and yellow. Yeah. And if you cut me, I bleed
jaundiced.
Black and yellow.
Terrible Gosport hospital.
They called him the bumblebee.
Yeah, there's a lot of oxygen deficiency. For once, I'm not regretting all those Borussia Dortmund tattoos, Marcus.
Yes. You thought your moment had come when they won the Champions League in the 90s, but no, it's carried
Absolutely.
On, of course. So you must be enjoying it. But yeah, I mean, Dortmund and Bayern, it's nice to have some sort of title race somewhere in Europe, of course, this season. Although, to be fair, in Serie A, they do as well. But Bayern won 5-2. Against Eintracht Frankfurt, and Leon Goretzka with a lovely opener. The delicious side foot volley.
Oh, but it was hit with such power as well, and it had a little deflection on its way to him as well. So it almost feel like he can slow down time and just take an extra moment. That was brilliant from him. I tell you, I mean, this is, you know, not exactly going to be a shocker to anyone, is it? But if you look at players like Goretzka and Kai Havertz, Timo Werner, like there are some really, really top quality players coming through for Germany again, which is annoying. And you just think, oh God, have they got another generation of amazing players that we're going to have to wait out again? Yes, by the looks of it.
Hang on, Jim. Their first round knockout in the last World Cup, is that not enough for you?
Yeah, wankers.
That was brilliant. I will never stop enjoying that, but it's in the past, isn't it?
Yeah. And in the past, it must remain.
Is there a situation that sort of detests that I like that when an amazing goal is scored under these conditions, because there's nobody in the actual stadium, people will not think of these goals as being amazing goals because they're not celebrated like
I know
amazing
what you mean.
Goals are.
Yeah.
It takes there are some incredible goals being scored in the Bundesliga for the first 2 weekends back after lockdown.
Pete, you're absolutely right. And I think what's going to happen is, you know, when you see sometimes people on the internet who've got no friends will do this kind of, oh, I've written a big column about all the greatest forgotten goals in football history, right? Because what's happened is someone scored an amazing goal, but it's been in like a 5-1 defeat or whatever.
I'm friends with those people.
Your pitch didn't go down very well then, Luke. They didn't want it. Those losers on the internet.
I haven't got any friends either, but I'm just not good enough, clever enough to write those kind of articles. But the idea is that if I was just going to say is that if we get through a situation where for a 6-month period or a year period even, there's no fans in football games, obviously in the grand scheme of things, 5, 6, 7, 8 years time, it's probably going to seem like a little bit of an anomaly. We hope, because we don't want it to happen again. And if it does, I think you're absolutely right, Pete. I think people will see snapshots of those goals and they just won't be shared and they won't be as viral as perhaps they would, because it doesn't, to be perfectly frank, hearing that sound, it was quite a novelty when I think it was Haaland did it in the first game back for Dortmund, hearing that kind of pop and that slot of the ball hit the back of the net. But all you hear now is like a weird echo. And it's quite strange.
But also, you're sort of getting a unique kind of lockdown goals, I think, where like Werner's third looked like a training ground weird anomaly in the Mainz Leipzig match. We'll get into that later on, obviously. But yeah, it felt like the keeper was kind of on the training ground. He was on the training ground. Everyone's just having a nice time. And there was nobody to celebrate it anyway. So yeah, there's going to be a generation of lost goals. The lost goals.
Mm. Yeah, I think Eintracht Frankfurt will be happy that a couple of their goals may get lost in the annals.
Well, I mean, Marcus, sorry to cut you off, but one of the big takeaways from that for me was Martin Hinteregger. I'm a huge fan of a centre-back being their top scorer this season.
Yeah, but also getting a sort of hat-trick with 2 goals and 1 own goal. Yes, please.
Jimmy's got 8 goals this season.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There was an amazing bit of commentary in that game as well from the legend that is Paul Dempo Dempsey, right? And it was perfectly timed and it was amazing, right? It was just ahead of the first goal. And he says, so great array of young talent on the bench for Bayern today. But here's Thomas Müller, ageless, timeless, remorseless, and he sets up the opener for Bayern. And it's like, what is it, the Terminator?
Here's Müller, ageless, timeless, remorseless, and he sets it up for the opener for Bayern Munich.
Remorseless. He stamped on a rat.
I won the World Cup, but I don't care. There's some truth to that, though, because Müller's goal was clinical. It was almost horrible in its kind of efficiency. He was just so bored of not scoring, and it like Bayern really did look like they were throwing their weight around at that point, and it seemed even starker with no fans.
Yeah, bleak.
He's got an on-off switch. He's either scoring a goal or he's not existing.
Yeah, remorseless. It was like Dempo was going to say, timeless, ageless, remorseless. Of course, he's come back from the year 2160. Like, what are you talking about?
With a vaccine.
Are there any strikers or forwards that are remorseful?
Yeah, sorry about that, everyone.
Quite a few.
Joe Linton.
The post-match interview.
That Leeds match earlier in the season.
Yeah, I love the idea of just a post-match interview and going, yeah, at the end of the day, I'm just really sorry for the sadness I've inflicted.
Yeah, I've hurt them today.
Yeah. Even Chris Sutton wasn't like that.
Yeah. I'm also a huge fan of Martin Keown, who was on the co-coms, like religiously and dogmatically sticking to calling Kingsley Coman Koeman.
Yeah, nice.
Which is a completely different player of some repute who you probably played against, Martin, would probably be the clues you need to not call him Koeman.
There was a lovely bit of action in the Berlin Derby on the Friday where the comms line went down from the actual stadium itself. So our very own Andy Brassel was effectively on core commentary. It was very exciting.
Yeah,
nice.
He did not shame us.
He did not shame us.
He didn't plug us either, though, did he? So, you know, let's have a bloody word with him.
You're right. He didn't scream Football Ramble Daily.
Forgot us, didn't you, Andy? As soon as you got your big moment, you forgot us.
Again, completely apart from Andy, there was a lovely kind of moment like last weekend when obviously the Bundesliga came back, and like all of those kind of presenters who'd been doing Bundesliga commentary like right throughout the season were a bit like, oh, you're back, are you? Oh yeah, now there's nothing to do. Now your new boyfriend's gone away. You're back with me, are you? Fuck you. Fuck.
Oh, dear. Jim, your Bayern Leverkusen team, they beat Gladbach 3-1. Kai Havertz leading the charge once again.
Yep. He had a nice, easy one to start with, didn't he? And then a penalty that they were a bit fortunate to get, I think. But yeah, they looked comfortable, didn't they? And also, I love that Mönchengladbach, they did what they said they would do, didn't they? And they had the cardboard cutouts in the stand. And one of them was Jan Sommer, who was not far behind the real Jan Sommer in the goal, which is quite fun. But yeah, I was very impressed with Leverkusen. I'm really glad I've chosen them because they just look very, very together, and they were the better team by a long, long way. They look very comfortable in possession and very sort of dominant and direct. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's nice. And Kevin Volland is still to come back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Gladbach's Marcus Thuram scored. It was always nice to have a Marcus in there. And Sven Bender got the third. Yes. And it's always nice to have a Sven in there, Jim.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Marcus Thuram scoring an equaliser with 40 minutes to go and legging it to get the ball out of the net.
Yeah,
Just save your energy, mate.
It's like his dad, isn't it? It's like his dad in the World Cup. So I've seen what you do when you score. You become completely possessed. You become a madman.
Remorseless.
Yeah, remorseless indeed. I like as well. Can I just draw attention to the fact that Marcus very quietly, like a hype man in the background, after talking about it being nice for there to be a Sven in there, just added the line, in there, just in case anybody missed the little Sven reference.
Get in there.
But Thuram, joking aside, Thuram looks like a great player, doesn't he? It's a real. There's a lot of excitement to be had about his future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should say so. My FC Köln side was involved in another 2-2 draw. This time they pegged back. It was Fortuna Düsseldorf this time. They got two very late goals indeed. So a very pleasing point for the lads. Something to build on.
I think we can Marcus, agree. Can I just chime in there and say I was so sickened by Mainz's performance. Did it actually put me off watching Köln against Düsseldorf? And I'll make no apology for that. I thought I would fully plan to get through a nice day of football yesterday in the Bundesliga. Schalke pissed the hell out of me, pissed me off like no end. Mainz were embarrassingly bad. And I just thought, you know what? I'm only going to keep half an eye on the Köln game because they've done that to me.
It fired up Liverpool Twitter, I noticed, because obviously Timo Werner has been linked with Liverpool pretty much constantly throughout the season, and he probably will go. But they were just everyone was just talking about him going to Liverpool. Like that's the only metric we understand them through. Mm. It's the only prism we can view the Bundesliga through. Who's going to Liverpool next?
Yeah, or Newcastle, Peter, but more on them in just a moment, of course. Back here in the United Kingdom, the government have said close contact and competitive training can begin again. Of course, if they have already started doing that, then it depends whether that was good or not. But the Premier League clubs will vote on Wednesday whether to go ahead with this. So the season, it's moving in the right direction for those who want football to return, of course, and we're among them for obvious reasons. So we'll have to wait till Wednesday to see if it goes through, but people seem to think that it is very unlikely that will get voted down. So we're a step in the right direction.
I think the government needs a lot of distractions at the moment. Hey, look, the football's back. Hey, guys.
Yeah. Look, it's the FA Cup final. We're doing it now. Don't ask questions. Just watch it.
It's Newcastle versus Newcastle B. Hooray.
Oh, the B team won.
Christian Atsu will play.
Yeah, the B team won and immediately folded. Yeah, as I was saying, there is a potentially interesting sideshow to this as well, though, isn't there? That some players are still saying that they're not entirely comfortable with returning, and there's a lot of confusion over what the sort of what their rights will be regarding that. So that I don't think that story's quite as cut and dry as we think yet.
Well, I don't think there's a huge amount of confusion. I think the as part of the deal, as far as I understand it, the league and the clubs have to offer the players a chance to opt out if they want to. Mm. And so I suppose the further issue might well be if certain sections of football fans start using it to hold it against certain players if the season doesn't pan out as perhaps they'd like, which we've seen happen in different guises in the past, scapegoating and all the rest of it. But I'm fairly certain that players, if they don't feel comfortable, Marcus, I think you mentioned N'Golo Kanté last week, he may well be one of them.
Yeah, Troy Deeney as well.
Yeah, there might be different examples of that. So that will be involved, yeah.
Yeah, Christian Cabaselli said that Watford are injecting the players with coronavirus so that it voids their season and they can't go down, which is a bald stim to make on Twitter.
My goodness me, did he actually say that?
He did. I tweeted.
Did you see what he did, though? He quote tweeted somebody saying, "I don't really care about Watford before, but they've been an absolute disgrace, wriggling around doing everything they can to try and get out of relegation." So he quote tweeted that, and I think fair play. They've got their right to reply.
We're injecting ourselves with COVID, my word. Christian, come on
outrageous.
Now.
Outrageous.
Gentlemen, did you see that Maurizio Pochettino formally ended his ties with Spurs this week? And he revealed in an interview that he had a coffee with Unai Emery after they both lost their jobs within 10 days of each other, which I thought was quite nice.
Is that how the formal severing works?
Yeah, no. I think the coffee was a little while ago.
They all munch on a biscotti.
Yeah,
I love it when you get a little biscuit with a coffee.
Yeah. Well, Poch said that they just sort of met up and chatted about their experiences, and of course they were within enemy dugouts. But I think brothers in football, Jim, which is nice to see a bit of unity in North London. I think you'll agree.
Yeah, I hope they had a lovely evening.
Poch also said in the same interview that he's ready for his next job. He says he's, whether that's abroad or not, we'll see, but he would probably prefer it to be England. So, away the rumours.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
You'd have him at Newcastle, would you, Pete?
Yes, I would. I'd like to make that very clear. Yes, I would.
Oh, no, they've got a manager at the moment, haven't they?
Whether the takeover happens or not, I would definitely do that, yes.
Is it an improvement on what they've already got, though? That's what you've got to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also said in that interview that that when he was manager of Espanyol, he was linked with a job at Real Madrid when Jose Mourinho was the manager of Real Madrid. And he said, "Oh, no, my kids sleep in Espanyol pyjamas every night. Mm. And so we're very happy where we are." And when Espanyol played Real Madrid, Mourinho gave his kids presents of Real Madrid pyjamas, saying, "Here you go, they can they can wear those now." And I thought to myself, that's a really nice thing to do, but is that essentially saying that please come and take my job because I don't want it anymore? Because that's what it comes across as.
Through some children's garments. So spooky. Yeah.
But that's the Mourinho way, isn't it? It's like he's done this thing, and I don't know what the thing means, but the thing is going to stay in my head for years.
Jumping out of a clothes basket.
Yeah.
with some kids.
Yeah,
clothes.
You did the laundry basket and they were in there. Well, you mentioned Newcastle. It's been touted in the press, Peter, that Rafa Benitez wants to return to Newcastle if and when the takeover happens. And apparently he'd like to sign John Stones and Ross Barkley. So, by this stretch, Newcastle are going to have about 6 new managers and about 18 new players come to summer.
But this is the great thing about it, right? This is why a potential takeover of a club with loads of money is absolutely amazing if you are a hack journalist.
Manna from heaven, isn't it?
On a sports desk. Because basically, it gives you it's like getting a get out of jail free card playing Monopoly. You can basically just say whatever you want and no one will question it. And you just have a lovely couple of weeks or months or whatever where you haven't really got to do any actual work.
Oh, it's like being a games master in Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. You just roll in a d20, or you've been killed by a Kestrel, or Ross Barkley's going to go to Newcastle. Solomon Rondon wants to come back on a... Yeah, you're going to be killing a Kestrel on...
Is this like some sort of Ken Loach-themed Dungeons and Dragons that you played in your weird Hovis advert youth?
Pete sounds like he's been drinking a lot of Kestrel.
Kestrel. It's Tiskin, you know that.
What I love is, though, is that everyone's getting wrapped up in this story about Newcastle, obviously. Like, even Steve Bruce is commenting on it. Even he's realised that it's going. He's like, I really want this takeover to happen. Let's talk about stuff that hasn't
Bacon,
happened.
Bacon, is it? Yeah. P45, is it?
I think, I have no idea what's going to happen there, but certainly we know that in France, Djibril Cissé said he wants to come out of retirement. Have you seen this? 38-year-old Djibril Cissé.
I can't believe he's only 38.
It's mad,
isn't it? I know what you mean. He says he wants to reach the milestone of 100 goals in Ligue 1. He says, I'm a goal scorer and I'm a man of numbers. I love to score goals. I need 4 more goals and I need to do it before I die. He said it's
well,
annoying.
Yeah, cool. You have to do everything before you die.
I was going to say, yeah, that's very difficult otherwise. But he says it's annoying him that he hasn't got to 100 goals, and he feels that now is the right time to achieve that feat. And I thought, well, I mean, now is not the time to do that, of course, but you know, it'd be just his luck that the league has been suspended until September. But he said he'd play for free. And he did retire from football, though. He's had a form for this before. He retired from football in 2015 at the age of 34, only to return 2 years later to play in Switzerland. And he had a very good goal-scoring record there. I'm not sure if it was the Swiss top flight or not. But either or, obviously, it's a little bit of a step down from Ligue 1. And he did sign for Vicenza last year, but he didn't play. There was some financial difficulties at the club or whatever. Now, for Vicenza, I forget which division they're in, but they're not in the top flight in Italy. So he's had a bit of previous with this. But he is 38, and the season won't start again.
And not an out-and-out striker, you would say, either.
He would be an out-and-out striker. He would be an out-and-out striker.
Would he play at that as 38, though? Crying out loud. He always got cut in, didn't he?
Yeah, he's definitely going to be playing for a team who are near the bottom, aren't they, if he's getting there at all. But this is interesting to me, because say, in theory, let's say the season starts up again, and in this hypothetical scenario, everything's normal again, and he can reasonably play for a team in Ligue 1. If he gets those 4 goals, does he stop then? Because presumably if he gets 101, the way his brain works, he's going to have to go for 200.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a strange one, isn't it? It would have to be a promoted club with not much money at all and maybe a small squad and looking for a bit of prestige and whatnot to bring him in as a PR move, but also think maybe he's got a little bit of quality despite being a bit older, because, you know, he did get about 40-odd caps for France or something. But I know what you mean. How dedicated is he? And is he going to be that guy who comes on and just shoots on sight for anywhere and completely disrupts the team because he's just all about scoring goals?
Never heard of a man after a 4-goal contract before.
Yeah.
And then I'll leave immediately. Does anyone want a quick rundown of the names of his children?
Please.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, go on.
Prince Kobe Cissé, Cassius Clay Cissé, Marley Jackson Cissé and Gabriel Cissé. I think there's an Iwana Cissé in there as well, but with some great names in there as well.
Those goals he scored in that Swiss team, Marcus, were in the third tier of Switzerland.
Yeah, there you go.
Greg Gorman, mate.
It's quite a step up to Ligue 1. But I don't mind the chat. I quite like the chat because it's clear that if you're playing professional football at the top level, you're most of your career, then you need to really believe in yourself. And I'm sure he thinks he can still do it. And I wonder whether, if he's looking for inspiration for someone like Claudio Pizarro, who's obviously still playing in Germany, or he was, and he's 41 at the moment. So if he could get a promotion, I mean, that's the problem, is it's all up in the air at the moment. But if he could get a team that were promoted to Ligue 1 and he could play a couple of cameos, he could probably get him on penalties. He could probably get 4.
Yeah. He was talking this week about his remember his leg break against Blackburn, I think it was.
He had 2 in his career, 2 really bad ones.
The one that was like a double compound where it was like, you know, bony coming out, skinny. But the doctor apparently had to, his leg was already broken. He was lying there on the way to, I think on the way to hospital, and the doc had to pull on his already broken leg because it had lost the blood flow. There was something wrong with like the veins or something. The doctor had to pull on his broken leg. It's the most disgusting thing I've ever. And he would have lost his foot if he hadn't done it. But imagine like knowing that much about legs to pull on an already broken leg. You're just literally compounding a fracture there.
Yeah. It's amazing what trained medical professionals can do. But but Emmanuel Adebayor, when he signed for Crystal Palace, I think, he wanted to get 100 Premier League goals. I think that was part of his motivation for going there. He didn't. I'm pretty sure he's got 97, I think, is the tally. Yes, 97 is his tally. So you sometimes do get strikers who are very near a milestone fancy. And I suppose for, like I say, a smaller club who might be lacking a goal scorer, might be lacking a bit of experience, might go for that. But he's been out of the game for a bit. And of course, they're all out of the game until September at least. So
You were talking him up 5 minutes ago.
I wasn't.
And then we revealed that it was a third-tiered Swiss team or whatever.
Well, I wasn't sure. My point was I wasn't sure whether... All right, I think he can do it.
Back him for the romance.
PSG... Get PSG on it. You're going to win the league anyway next season or the season after. Why not put him up there?
That should be a little challenge. The league themselves should say, and the UEFA and staff should say, no, we're going to continue to sanction this project at PSG, actually, but you have to play Jibril Cissé out front every game.
Until he gets his 100.
They still win.
Yeah,
He'll get his 100th by the end of the month. But there we are. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have a quick break and we'll see you in just a moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the Ivory Tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Petersen went to Spielberg, went, yeah, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E-f***ing teammate.
I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Guess what, everybody? It's now time for emails with Peter D.
Email show at footballrambledaily.com. And now Pete is reading it out. Well done.
Peter D, I'll take it. Yes, it is time for emails. If you want to get in touch with the show, as that jingle just said, show at footballrambledaily.com. Paul Skinner has got in touch. Skinner! Hi, Pete slash lads. I was watching season 3 of Netflix's Spanish language series, The Heist. The show basically talks about a group of criminals planning and attempting to execute the perfect robbery of the Bank of Spain. The episode in question, the leader of the group, the professor, is planning the robbery in a Portuguese monastery. I could not believe my eyes when a pair of monks walked past the professor. One of them looked like the Brazilian superstar Neymar. He even has several lines, which are very random and bear no relevance to the plotline. Please see attachment below. And he sent me a clip of this sort of mini series about robbing a bank in Spain. And yeah, Neymar is just in it, dressed as a monk, looking very much like Neymar. And not at all like a monk. It's really confusing. We'll stick it up on Twitter. It's so weird. But if you are watching season 3 of Netflix's Spanish language series, The Heist, I don't want to sashay our movie section into a big money TV adaptation. But Neymar is just rocking out in a monastery.
It's called Money Heist, is it not?
I think so, yeah. What did I say? Money Heist?
Yeah, it's translated. It's just translated.
Well, Neymar's in it with a name like that, I assume the plot is loosely based around Neymar's father's activity.
Hello to Padawan Murray. Hi, boys. A quick email from the tub. Listening to you saying Berlin is the most underachieving city in Europe in regards to football, of course. Just a few others that quickly sprang to mind, though. Edinburgh. In a league that, in all honesty, could be there for the taking, Hearts and Hibs have contributed nothing except for a Hearts challenge out 15 years ago under the crazy Russian-Lithuanian leadership of Vladimir Romanov. Other cities that come to mind of recent years, Hamburg, Köln, Cologne.
Said capital cities.
Oh, right.
Well, it doesn't really matter. Right. Edinburgh's population is a lot smaller than Berlin's, and also Glasgow is the dominant city in Scotland, and the two teams have dominated for so long. Whereas in Berlin, just piss off with your Edinburgh chat, mate.
You're right there, mate. Sound a bit irked, Marcus. You're right.
I've made my point.
I think a thread has been pulled. Did we actually say capital cities, or did we just say cities?
I don't know if we did.
Oh, maybe we didn't, but I meant capital cities.
All right. Well, cool. As well as Rome, two large... Well, the email section is full of emails like this, so we didn't. As well as Rome, two large clubs in Lazio and Rome were struggling against what is a monopoly in Serie A. One league title between them in this century and only a couple of cup wins. As well as that, we can look at the Soviet countries and cities, even the likes of Moscow, Zenit St. Petersburg, Shakhtar Donetsk and Dynamo Kiev. Their capacity is that of a good Europa League run, well below the pinnacle of European football. I'm rambling now, so I'll leave it. Thank you for keeping me company through the cold, naked shame of an hour-long bath. Sir, that bath is too long, so leave it be.
I'd like to correct him, actually, because technically this century that Rome had two winners, because Lazio, they were crowned champions in the year 2000, and Roma were champions in 2001. Mm. And also, Roma did recently get to a semi-final of a Champions League. Lazio, cool. Yeah, I mean, I think that Jim's chat of Berlin was particularly good. I have to say.
I think there is a section in I think it's in Why England Lose, about the strange case of underachieving capital cities in terms of winners of European competition in particular. So I don't know if we did say capital cities, but shut up, Jim. I've run out of steam.
I mean this season very much Liverpool, the capital city of Liverpool, will be winning the Premier League. So,
and they are European champions.
The Why England Lose shout from you, Jim, is particularly apt because that's going to be our next book club episode. So look out for that, and maybe we'll cover it on that episode.
Smashing. Well, finally for now, Justin Griffith says, I applaud your decision not to do a COVID-19 starting 11, even if it does mean denying the world a flattened Ben Arca. We're not going to be doing any COVID-11s, but again, we've had our cake and we've eaten it there. If you want to get to the show, showfootballrumbledaily.com.
Love that. Now, before we get to the film club, Peter, you brought our attention to some hair crimes.
Oh, my word. They've, yeah. Everyone's come back from training with some amazing barnets. And obviously there'll be a lot of football sports kind of organs that are doing a rundown. But some people have been doing their own hair. They've been taking out the clippers and stuff. Some people have just growing out their locks. Ashley Young has hair. Who knew? We've not seen it for such a long time. Sadio Mane's had a nightmare. His looks awful.
My favourite was Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's, which is it's baffling to look at.
I've not seen that one. What's that like? Describe it.
It's like, tell you what it looks like. The hair looks like, have you seen Carlito's Way? Have you seen Sean Penn's character in Carlito's Way? It looks like that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you're right.
He's got a quite unusual hairline, isn't he? And it's grown out to reflect that.
Unusual is right.
Yeah. Alison Becker's got some lovely, lovely long hair. Bobby Firmino as well looks, everyone's saying, looks like Ross Geller when it's in the past. A young Ross Geller.
It looks like Jackson. Stash.
Young Ross Geller.
It does.
I think I have to say that I'm quite disappointed in the cowards who've shaved their heads. And I include you in that, Hector Bellerin, as much as I love you.
All right, yeah.
I think we've missed the opportunity to see some quite intense hair. Like James Maddison's looking pretty, looking like he's been living in the woods, but he's like he's embraced that, which is quite cool. And you're right, Becker looks fantastic. He should keep it that way. He looks like a 70s Brazilian.
He really, really does. Did you hear also that Kiske Honda, who's down at Botafogo, he did this really, really late last night, I believe. He's in Botafogo playing for them. He's also the unpaid Cambodia manager. He was on Twitter last night asking if there were any social issues he should know about in Brazil. Aww. And he got his answers. He got some answers last night.
Still getting them, I expect.
Jair Bolsonaro.
The president, to start over there.
A lot of logging going on, Honda. But like, he's kind of like a really interesting character in that. Like, remember, like, it was last season he was trying to get signed for Man United and a couple of other Premier League teams, and he was going to play for free and all that stuff. He's an interesting character, one to watch, I think, in the future.
Yeah, I love the fact he's gone to Botafogo, a little swan song down in Brazil. He scored on his debut in March.
It's a penalty.
Was it? Okay, I remember that he scored, but I know Brazil, Bolsonaro, the president, is trying to push football to come back. I don't know. I think it may well have done. I'm not sure. So we may see more of Honda on the football pitch against all of their wishes.
Yeah. Bolsonaro also said a little while ago after the Amazon fires that they had been paid for by Leonardo DiCaprio. So there's madness all over the world. But yeah, so Leonardo DiCaprio had paid people to set the Amazon on fire.
Listen, do you know what? At least we can have a break from all this madness in a minute, and we can talk about the film we had to watch this week for Pete's Film Club. So it's not all bad, is it?
An Amazon fire of its own.
Yeah, indeed. And it was the only film of the three Gulf films on Amazon that was indeed free, for obvious reasons, because it would have been a crime to charge anyone for that. So that leads us neatly on, ladies and gentlemen, to Pete's Film Club.
Pete's Film Club.
Film's Feet Club. Pete's Feet Club, were you going to say that?
You're just desperate to swear there, weren't you?
my mind was like, don't say it. We don't want to go to the film club this week. I have to say it. Get it out there.
Pete has become our torturer at this point.
Yeah.
I really have. I mean, this was a thing we were going to be doing when there was no football. I was actually going to retire this feature this week because it was, you know, the first film we looked at was obviously Goal 1. We did Goal 2 last week. And Goal 3, I thought, gave us a little bit of cadence. It kind of wraps everything up. But then I watched Goal 3, Taking on the World, and decided we simply can't. We simply can't end it here. We won't end it here because it is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen in my life. This is what Goal 3, Taking on the World, is about. With Football's World Cup as its backdrop, this is the story of two players in the England team who want their country Chelsea to win by scoring the winning goal in the final. Their journey is filled with humour, romance, tragedy and redemption.
Liam Adams is coming forward. I'm not surprised about this because he was always going to be a potential penalty taker, but it's a big moment for him and for England here. He's got to try to beat Ricardo to keep England's hopes alive. Goodness me, the pressure must be enormous down there as Adams steps forward here for England. Oh, Ricardo's got down and turned it onto the bar. Oh, what heartbreak for Liam Adams and England. The goalkeeper managed to get them all on that. And in doing so, with the help of the crossbar, he has brought Liam Adams and England's hopes almost to a standstill.
Lads, I'm so sorry. I'm really... This is the worst thing I've ever done, and we've been doing this for 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
So bad.
I mean, I was... This is the closest I've come to being personally affronted by something someone else has asked me to do. And
yeah,
at least Soccer Dog had a dog in it. I'll say that. A dog that deserved better, but a dog nonetheless, right? Mm. And this is the first film I've seen, not just in Pete's Film Club, but the first film I've seen generally. Because I'll tell you, here's a little very, very quick trip down memory lane. When I was a kid, a few of our mates and me, we were a bit too young to get into pubs consistently. But a lot of time, my mate's parents would go away and we'd have like a spare house or whatever. So what we'd do is we'd get some beers from the off-license and we would go to Blockbuster and we would find the shittest B-movies we could find because they're quite fun to watch, particularly like the horror ones and stuff. Mm. And so I spent a lot of my youth watching some very, very bad movies, right? And this is the first film I've seen, Goal 3, where it genuinely feels like they're making it up as they go along. Mm. Like the first 10 or 15 minutes, it's almost like you can't kind of ground yourself in what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Like it's an endless procession of like offensive cliches, bad acting. And so I couldn't get my head around the idea that somehow, despite all the money in washing around football and has been for years and years, that hour and a half is the worst value in football history. That's 10 million quid on an hour and a half. That's £3 million more than Portsmouth spent on John Utaka, right? It's absolutely unforgivably bad. I cannot really stress. Words barely scratch the surface of how bad this film is.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree with you, Luke. And the problem is that it really disrespects the already shoddy goal film franchise
or
whatever it is. Because you have the first film, which is kind of like, all right, okay, there's a bit of sort of fun and nonsense. Okay, fine, we'll let you have that, okay. And then the second one comes along, which we talked about last week. It's kind of like, that was a bit weird, but I suppose it's sort of in line with what's going on. Right, you're okay. And then this one is kind of like, no, hang on. You've gone so far, because I think one of the criticisms that we had of the goal films is that it jumps so quickly. It's kind of like he meets this guy who says, oh, I think you could play for Newcastle. And then the next minute he's training with Alan Shearer and all the boys. And you think, well, hang on, whoa. But I appreciate they don't have a 10-part series on Netflix to kind of character, you know, draw out the story. But there is, you have Santiago, the main character, and you're with him through the first two and his life and so on and so forth. And then straight from the off on the third, he is pretty much just discarded as a background character. You're introduced to two new characters who also play for Real Madrid. Everyone plays for Real Madrid. And you're like, hang on, where are we? And as Luke said, you're not grounded in anything.
Mm.
They couldn't even afford Kuno Becker for this one properly.
Yeah, I know. That's it. It was so crap that words fail me. Mike Ashley's in it.
That was amazing to see. What a cameo.
The only words he says is I forget the guy's name, but it's like, fuck off, John. That's all he says in it.
It's fuck off PK, isn't it? He's talking to Paul Kemsley, who's the ex Spurs executive, the football executive.
Sorry.
But apparently didn't Mike Ashley spend £1 million for that cameo? It was like a bit of a joke for him. I mean, everything's a bit of a joke for him, but I think he spent £1 million for that crappy piece of nonsense that he did in there.
Pete, I think you'll find Slazenger aren't a joke to Mike Ashley. Lonsdale aren't a joke to Mike Ashley. You know, These are brands that were a joke before Mike Ashley turned them into not being a joke anymore.
I was very much enjoying Kuno Becker's hair. Gone full Marcus Speller circa 10 years ago, I'd say. What do you reckon, Marcus?
Yeah, a little bit of that, yeah. The only things that I could say that were positives was Kuno Becker's hair, the fact that there's a Sven Göran Eriksson lookalike that pops up every now and then. And of course, it's all centered around the 2006 World Cup. So you see that World Cup, you see a bit of footage from that World Cup from different angles that I hadn't seen before.
And with some hard fire over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was nice to relive Beckham's free kick against Ecuador from a slightly different angle. But that's about it. Otherwise, it was total shit.
Every single shot, apart from the bits where they're showing clips from the Germany World Cup finals, looks like your actor's friend showreel on Vimeo. It looks like you've not gotten Corey quite yet. So here's what you're having to put up with.
I can't
believe that we relived that Ecuador game in a way that was worse than the game itself there. It's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, for me, football and movies are two of my favourite things. So this felt a little bit like being beaten up by my parents. Like, it was just so bad. And it was as if, like, whoever wrote the script had won the opportunity to do so in some sort of competition in Nuts magazine. Because I think one of the worst things about it was the sort of what happens on tour stays on tour Geordie fans subplot, and the way that they and the film in general kind of viewed women. Like, every scene they were in was an embarrassment, and as Luke alluded to, relied on some sort of awful stereotype. There's a lot of, you know, there's a huge sexist lens going on. And the bit where they meet some Jamaica fans and they immediately start smoking weed, like, it's such Little England bullshit. It was so hateful. Whoever wrote it did such a poor job of actually, you know, lending it any dignity. And as you say, I was, like, genuinely annoyed for the makers of the first two movies, because you know, they're not exactly The Godfather Part 1 and 2, but, you know, like, they stood up as movies, but this just really sort of undoes that. Like, the romantic bits, like the few that there were, looked like Savage Garden videos. And, like, just who are these two guys as well? It'd be like if in the first 10 minutes of John Wick 3, like, he sort of, like, you know, had a little rest behind a table because he's been shot or whatever, as John Wick repeatedly does. And then the rest of the movie was about two extras. Like, you just don't really see John Wick again.
One of them looks, I mean, one, I'm not going to spoil, well, I am going to spoiler it. One
spoil it for
the,
crying out loud.
One,
yeah,
the,
screw
one
it.
Of the top England professionals dies just before the final act of the movie. And Sven doesn't even attend the funeral, you notice. No, they couldn't even get the body double for Sven to attend the funeral of an England international.
The thing that absolutely stunned me about that is, you're absolutely right to point that out. And someone earlier mentioned the idea of these four Geordie mates who are from the first movie, and just cameos in the first movie, and they play what someone else described as a subplot, which I thought was very generous, but I get the point. but the thing about that is, Pete, talking about the funeral, the four Geordies, one of them is a taxi driver who once gave the main character, the football player, a lift. They're all at the funeral. They've got invited. They're also at his wedding. They're at his fucking wedding. How are they there?
The guy's fiance is there. Obviously, is rather upset because her fiance's just died. And
Rob
and yet the funeral. Yeah, suddenly the funeral becomes a quite sort of rather laid back affair. And one of those Geordie fans walks up to her and just mumbles in this sort of stereotype accent. Early year. Thank you very much, Bet, for letting us come and give her respects. Like, how are you? Like, and she just smiles, and it's like. Right, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that. And and it's it is utter. I can't. Don't see this, ladies and gentlemen, for crying out loud. Don't even sort of go.
Not even
don't even think
joke.
To yourself. Yeah, exactly. This is a joke. Don't. This is really, really depressed us.
Yeah, I hated it.
I would like to name some people: Simon Giles, the visual effects supervisor, the compositors: Richard Fox, David Emeny, Robert Willis, Ryan Hutchings, Alexander Ivanovich. They had their work cut out because they basically just went, right, can you make it look like a footballer is playing football in the World Cup, but do it on an iPhone app? Can you do it for a budget of £100? Because it consistently...
Poor guys.
And they know it's bad because in the bloody... In the credits, the focus puller, the guy who's trying to tie it all together, he's allowed a little nickname, Jonathan Chunky Richard. He's in the credits as Chunky Richard. They don't care. They don't care about us. This is open contempt. And Mike Ashley is at the root of this. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, he is. He thinks it's funny. It's just another little dig at you lot, isn't it? Like the guy that played Charlie Braithwaite, the guy who dies, and frankly, I don't think he died enough in that movie. They should have dug him up and killed him again. But he couldn't look less like a footballer. And the bit at the start of the movie is that he gets offered a chance to be a footballer becoming an actor. So it's like this attempt at this meta reversal of what's happening in the first two
movies.
And then they just go to Romania and have some gypsies.
It's just but like,
how bad? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But how bad is it, though, when... So the guy Charlie dies and his teammate... is it Liam? He's also in the England squad. And you think, okay, Liam's going to now come on and score the winner for England. But no. The film actually stays a bit true to life. England play Portugal in the quarterfinal, of course, in 2006 World Cup, and they lose on penalties. And Liam steps up to take his penalty, and you think, oh, how are they going to have him score and England carry through? No, he misses his penalty, and England go out. And then you see the actual footage of the England players going around the stadium as they did with Beckham and co, sort of applauding the fans and looking very, very upset. And he's there, and his mate Charlie, of course, died. And he just then sort of solemnly takes off his England top, and it's just got R.I.P. Charlie on it. And he's just sort of walking around.
I screamed at that moment, Marcus, because it was so weird. He's just Mr. Bentley. And he takes his top off and he's so badly turned. R.I.P. Charlie. Fucking hell. Oh,
well, this is a waste of time then, wouldn't it? You know?
It's not
Andres Iniesta scoring in the final and whipping his top off and honouring his mate that way. It's kind of like, oh, well, I had this planned.
Oh, there's a couple of bits you guys have we haven't mentioned, which you've got to mention. One is the appearance of Tamer Hassan, who, like,
Why is he wearing shorts and socks?
Yeah, just sits around with a lanyard on, just saying, "Come on, get amongst it, yeah." But, and the second bit is that when at the beginning, when the guy who's apparently good enough to play for Real Madrid in England is going to appear in a movie, despite not having any idea what the movie's about and having no one accompanying him there, obviously not seen a script beforehand, he's still doing it, right? That's bad enough. The worst part of it is when they find out they're a part of the England squad because someone apparently rings one of them and just says, "I'll tell the other guys, well, will you?" Because he goes, hangs up. We're both in the England squad. Ray! So why is he ringing him? It's a big moment, that. You probably want to be ringing the guy himself.
Charlie, the bloke who actually appears in the film, as I said, he looks like Robert Asquith. He looks like the 70s. He's got a very old man's face. He's supposed to be playing. Yeah, he's supposed to be. I would be questioning his passport if he was signing for a football club, to be quite frank. But his last role was... I love criticise actors' trajectories, but his last role was on a straight-to-video on-demand romp with Thomas Turk, who's called Avengement.
Love that.
So
wow.
If you want to continue watching him, that's where you can watch him.
Don't.
Well, we look forward to goal four.
big time.
I genuinely want Kuno Becker to be able to, like, to be given the chance to put this right now. I see what he means. I see why he's so angry.
Look, this should be a tier on our Patreon. We just get this done. because this can't end like this. It's so awful. But guys, as I said, I was going to end this feature this week because I thought it was a really nice kind of like closing up of what we started a couple of months ago. But I can't. We're going to have to continue this. At least until the Premier League is back, because we can't finish on goal. It's awful. Next week's film, next Monday's film, is called Diamantino.
Ooh.
When Portuguese soccer hunk Diamantino blows it in the World Cup finals, he goes from superstar to laughingstock overnight. His sheltered worldview gets further shattered after learning about the European refugee crisis, and he resolves to make amends by adopting an African refugee, only to find that his new son is an undercover lesbian tax auditor investigating him on suspicion of corruption. And I'm reading straight from the website there. From the website. That is what it says. From there, Diamantino gets swept up in an odyssey involving twins and Secret Service skullduggery. Thank you very much.
It's a porno. It sounds like a porno.
It just sounds a little bit like a porno, but it's. I assure you, it's not.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Peter, are we going to do this feature until Goal 4 is released?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was suggested by Martin Kovsand in Norway. It looks to be tangentially football related and absolutely crazy. So thank you for that, Martin. And we'll see how that one pans out next Monday. Diamantino.
Diamantino. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. We've reached the end of today's football ramble. I hope you've had a bloody lovely time. If you want to ensure that you do have a lovely time today, do not watch Goal 3 for crying out loud. I'd recommend Soccer Dog 2 over it. That's how bad it is.
Soccer Dog 1.
We haven't watched that. We have good watched point. That one, and therefore we don't need to put it on.
Good point, Marcus. Just writing something down.
There we are. Jules and Andy are back tomorrow. Do get involved there. Plenty to listen to, of course, on Football Ramble Daily. But until we meet again, everybody, it's goodbye from Luke Moore.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Jim Campbell.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Pete Donaldson.
Diamantino.
It's goodbye from me.
This was a Stakhanov production.